This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins's office stands at the intersection of an intense set of crimes, from 10 shootings in Boston over the weekend to multiple incidents of apparent extremism and hate, including the stabbing of a rabbi in Brighton and the shooting deaths of two Black residents of Winthrop last month. All of that unfolding as Rollins continues a reckoning over tens of thousands of drug cases that may have been tainted by mismanagement and drug use at the labs that process the evidence. And she joins us live to talk about all of it. DA Rollins, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
So we had you scheduled for today, DA Rollins, before the 10 shootings this past weekend. Still, I'd like us to start there. Five different incidents involved. Do you have any updates for us beyond what was known as of earlier today?
Well, the Boston Police Department continues to work round the clock to try to make arrests in some of these shootings. It is an uptick that we are not happy with, but we've made one arrest with respect to some of those already, and we hope to be working and continue to work with our law enforcement partners to make more. I do want people to know there were no fatalities. That is, you know, not, we are happy nobody died and certainly don't want these numbers to continue to increase. But our Crime Strategies Bureau, along with the BRIC and the Fusion Center at the Mass State Police, we are all working hard to make sure we're taking these illegal guns off the street and holding people accountable for violent, serious crimes.
Does anything change in sort of your work or the way you respond, the way you're thinking about things after an outbreak of 10 shootings like this over a single weekend?
Yeah, we are constantly adapting. This is why having a crime strategies bureau that looks at data, arrests, when people are being released, whether there are tensions between different groups of individuals, or whether these are one-off situations. We are very, very happy. There were no fatalities this weekend. Overall, there are significantly less shootings at this time this year than they were last year. But that stat doesn't matter because there were still 10 this weekend, right? So we are in constant contact with each other and we are adjusting appropriately to see whether we can have more presence. We can understand why some of these shootings may have happened. Were individuals released recently? But we want to be more proactive rather than reactive to this type of violence.
So over the last couple of years here on the show, we've really focused a lot on community support, community interventions to stop community violence. You bring the law enforcement perspective on the show today. So I want to ask you, what do you see as the most important strategy that Boston's not using right now to help minimize community violence? Is there a piece of the puzzle that's really missing and needs to be there?
We have to acknowledge, coming out of a global pandemic, and we are not fully out of it yet, that there are tons of stressors and things that are exacerbating many of the problems that, you know, result in crime. You know, depending on the ages of the individuals that are the culprits of this violence, I think we can be working not just as law enforcement, but as you had said, with our community partners, with municipal, state and federal partners to see whether there are, programs and opportunities for individuals to be receiving the help that they need. Additionally, we have to be really diligent regarding people who are coming home from a carceral facility and re-entering into a community where there might be a feud that they have. These are all things working together. I think everything is connected, and we need our mayors and city managers, our city councilors, and our state reps and senators all thinking about this, and the community as well, to have jobs, housing, you know, good education opportunities, et cetera, so that we can start thinking about crime differently.
So Larry Calderoni is the head of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. He said that seeing police respond to multiple incidents like over this past weekend showed, quote, the absurdity of the defund the police movement and the lunacy of those who support it, end quote. I kind of juxtapose that in my head against the story in the Boston Globe today about a new unarmed crisis unit in Lynn. From your seat, what is the right balance between enforcement, crisis response in these moments?
So first and foremost, we had an officer three officers that were almost injured in a routine traffic stop where we arrested Theodore Gamble Williams. And he did sustain an injury in that, but we are very happy that no officers or community members were harmed during this traffic stop, where the individual had, of course, did not have a license to carry the firearm that the police saw during the stop. And I need to start by saying being a police officer is an incredibly hard and difficult job. I think both of these things can happen at the same time, right? I think we need to rethink how much we are asking the police to do. But I need to be clear, when I show up at a homicide scene, I don't want a social worker standing next to me. I want a police officer, a member of law enforcement, who understands how to de-escalate or has handled a violent, serious situation. There can be social workers there as well to assist the community or the individuals that have been impacted by the trauma. But we do need the police for these violent, serious situations that we see ourselves in. Imagine if we didn't have a police officer in Winthrop. We would be dealing with far more, you know, death potentially and harm in that circumstance. Imagine if we didn't have a police officer in Brighton when that rabbi, thank God, with all of the skills that he had, outmaneuvered Mr. Awad and was able to save his own life. And then the police came to end that threat. So we do need to work hand in hand with the police, but we also need collaborative law enforcement partners in a lot of these circumstances as well.
We're talking to Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins. DA Rollins, since you brought up Brighton and Winthrop, let's stay there for a minute. Two possible hate crimes in the last couple of weeks. In one case, a rabbi in Brighton stabbed 8 times. Less than a week later, I think those are reversed. A shooter killed 2 black people in Winthrop. After witnesses say he walked by and did not shoot multiple people who were not black. First of all, as a prosecutor, I want to know, you've talked extensively about the potential hate in both of these crimes. Do you think we are seeing a spike in hate crimes?
We are absolutely seeing a spike in hate crimes nationally. We see anti-Semitic rhetoric and hatred and violence on the rise across our country. We have seen black trans women being murdered, significantly high numbers across our country, including, of course, Puerto Rico, where there are things happening there as well. We've seen uptick, of course, in the AAPI community, and even more troubling, the elders in that community, as if it were not enough to just target a community. But many of the individuals that are being harmed and attacked are also protected based on their age, not only their either national origin, race, ethnicity, and other things. So sadly, we are. And I think what is troubling is we believe in the North oftentimes that, oh, that type of stuff doesn't happen here. And or that there are certain communities, for example, the Jewish community, that, oh, you know, they don't need our help. Yes, they do. We are seeing in Winthrop, in his own words, what Nathan Allen believed. We saw, this is not me speculating, we are looking at his handwriting stating vile things about Black people, drawing swastikas. We know now that on his phone, when we found his phone, that he was on an anti-Semitic website, right? And although no individuals of the Jewish faith, thank God, were not killed that day in Winthrop. We have said out loud, and so have other members of law enforcement, that box truck that was speeding down the street, had it not hit a car and then hit a property, was, if you took a right, the only two things down there are a temple and Deer Island. So where was he going? That's number one. And then very clearly in Brighton, we have situations with Mr. Awad, which is different. He's alive and he will be held accountable by us, but he is innocent until proven guilty. But we recently charged him with 2 hate crimes, bringing the total charges to 9, 7 felonies, 2 misdemeanors. And we are very confident that this attack was based and rooted in hate and anti-Semitism.
So again, just like this piece of the puzzle that we were talking about with community violence, I mean, hate is a community experience and often in some way or another a community perpetration. I wonder, as a law enforcement person, as a district attorney, given that we are seeing this increase, what do you see as your role and the role of your office in stemming this and reversing over time this tide? Tide's probably a melodramatic word, but I think you understand what I mean.
Of course I do. We have to speak out when it happens. I don't like the fact that, you know, my role at this point is reactionary, right? Sadly, this rabbi, you know, while the Jewish community has been screaming and saying there's a rise in anti-Semitism and nobody, you know, or not enough of us have been listening, we need only look over our shoulder to Duxbury and the football team or the Holocaust Memorial, where in the last 5 to 6 years, it's been desecrated not once, but twice, right? Winthrop has absolutely taints of anti-Semitism, as I said. And then we saw what happened in Brighton. What I want to do is not hide in the darkness and pretend it doesn't happen. These conversations are hard. They are challenging. They are hurtful. They make us confront things that, you know, nobody wants to wake up and talk about these type of things. But if we continue to ignore it, it will continue to exist. And that is why I chose, you know, to release the information about Nathan Allen in his own words, and why I choose, not just as a prosecutor, but to stand with the Jewish community and to say, we are going to stand with you and make sure that we root out this type of hate, hold people accountable when they do it, so it is a deterrent.
So just to clarify for listeners, when you say Duxbury, you're referring to the anti-Semitic play calls that were being used by the football team since 2010, just for listeners to clarify. I'd like to shift here now to the drug lab, because we've got stuff to talk about here, too. At the end of last week, you filed a motion with the Supreme Judicial Court, Massachusetts' highest court. It represents a, quote, global resolution of thousands of cases, end quote, in relation to cases connected to the now closed William A. Hinton State Laboratory Institute, after two chemists there, Annie Dukin, Sonia Farrick, were separately found to be botching samples. We are talking about as many as 70,000 convictions in this case. Is that correct?
Yes, at least. And only in Suffolk County. I want to be very clear that what we filed was only related to the jurisdiction I have, right? I am not encroaching on other district attorneys at all. I am simply saying, and the Hinton Lab, by the way, is in Suffolk County. It was in Jamaica Plain before it was closed by Governor Patrick. But yes, we are looking at upwards of 70,000 Suffolk County certifications that might be impacted here.
So I know you've talked with us before about the importance of people having trust in the system. You're asking the SJC to look at all these cases, which basically means regardless of whether one of the two disgraced chemists worked on it. Part of the filing from your office reads, quote, the public deserves to have faith in the government if we continue to refuse to acknowledge our failures and misdeeds at the Hinton Lab or cling to being right for fear of opening the floodgates regarding the tens of thousands of impacted cases and individuals. We will have lost a tremendous opportunity to show true leadership and reconciliation, end quote. This global approach does run the risk that some cases might be declared for new trials when they weren't handled by those who, by, let's say, Dukin and Farrick. Do you have any concern that if the global retrial happens, that that undermines trust by casting too wide a net?
No, I don't. Because as the government, we don't get to, I read a great article where a criminal defense attorney said, you don't get to cheat and win as the government. So let me just clarify one thing I said. The motion that we filed was technically in the Superior Court asking Judge Rajuti to send our motion up to the state Supreme Judicial Court. So that's number one. People need to understand the distinction between there were two chemists, both of whom engaged in criminal conduct. There were times when both of them were at the Hinton Laboratory, and the Hinton Lab, we know for sure, was not managed appropriately. So these are multiple failures. This is Farrakh and Dukin failing horrifically and criminally. And then the lab above and beyond those two was not managed appropriately. So we have systemic failures. And what I am not going to do is piecemeal make each of these impacted defendants come back to us and file a motion and have to go to each judge working this out. Systemic failures require systemic solutions. So I am not afraid of casting too broad a net. I think as a government, we need to, and that is what is going to instill faith back in the system.
I know your time is tight. Do you have time for one more question?
Always. Go ahead.
So this feels like a story that continues to be a source of shame for the state. And we are talking orders of magnitude that are breathtaking here, 70,000 cases. If what you are asking for happens, is healing there? Are we past the shame, or is there more that has to be done to move our Commonwealth past this blot?
Well, we have set up the Hinton Lab Initiative, and I think that's a lot of the work that we're doing right now. With respect to any sort of, this isn't truth, justice, and reconciliation per se, but we have to acknowledge the systemic failures that have happened here. Hard stop. And then we need to work on making sure that we set protocols in place so that it can never happen again. And once we start doing that with community involvement, not just law enforcement, not just prosecutors, but criminal defense attorneys and others, I think that is when we start moving toward a place where we can all sit down and say, okay, right? All I needed was an acknowledgement. And then we can start sort of moving forward. It's going to be hard, but we have to start there.
Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins, DA Rollins, thanks for starting the week with us. We appreciate it.
Take care.
You too. More time spent at home these last 17 months means more time noticing what's wrong or needs to be updated in your home or your yard. Just ask Tim the Toolman Taylor.
As you can see, our 1955 ranch home needs a lot of work, especially the roof. Now, you want to have a professional examine any weak or discolored areas like these and make sure they're properly attended to. For now, we'll just hop over these to a safer area. It's a little weak here. You want to avoid this area, too.
Yeah, we couldn't resist. All right. Old 90s TV shows aside, home improvement jobs, they are tricky. They can be really tricky. Some can be done solo, but even then it doesn't hurt to get a helping hand or a little advice, maybe a second opinion. So tell us, we're taking your calls. Have you tackled a home improvement job recently? Whether it's house, exterior, landscaping, yard, garden, flower boxes in the window of your apartment? How did it go? And are you thinking about starting one? What questions do you have? Any tips from your own experience that maybe you want to pass along to others? Call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston, which people already have been, because this is something lots of folks are doing. With me again this year, Robert Robillard from A Concord Carpenter and Jennifer Nawada, a landscape contractor for the show This Old House and owner of Nawada Landscape Designers Incorporated. Jennifer and Robert, thanks for coming back and joining us again.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to frame this up a bit, pun intended. You can tell we had a little fun with this as we were getting ready with something that's impacting many home improvement projects right now, and that is supplies. That's getting the stuff you need. Lack thereof, actually, really widespread supply chain problems across industries that are delaying production and delivery of products and increasing prices. Robert, why? Why are industries having this problem, and what kinds of supplies and materials are having it the worst?
So, oh, wow. Okay. I think there's a lot of reasons. Some of the most obvious reasons in the beginning were during the winter when we had the freeze and Texas was affected. We saw dramatic drops in spray foam, anything that had the chemicals in it from that chemical plant, because the pipes were frozen after they ran out of their emergency gas on their generators. And we saw spray foam, solvents, paints, things like that, where, for example, I think it was Sherman Williams or somebody was only offering 5 or 6 different colors because they couldn't do all the different colors. That, I think there was COVID caused problems with shipping and deliveries. And I also think that people left the business. People retired. And I also know that some of the factories that made some of the supplies for me for carpentry and renovations, they shut down several times, you know, whether they shut down during COVID or they shut down because they had COVID and they had to shut down for whatever, things just got backed up.
So I did not see Texas coming as part of the answer of that. I'll ask you, and I'm sorry, I'm laughing because it's a surprise, but certainly not out of disrespect for the incredible difficulties there were in Texas over the winter. So given those disruptions, what does it mean for home improvement projects? Ballpark, how much slower and how much more expensive?
Well, I can tell you, I can answer the more expensive because I've recently been rebidding jobs from several months ago that people now want to do. And it's 40 to 60% in some of the building materials.
Wow.
Which is nuts. How much longer? For example, I think it was my Marvin windows. We ordered some Marvin windows. They used to be 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks out. They're now 12, 14 weeks out. Garage doors were anywhere between 4 and 6 weeks out. They're now 21 weeks out, depending on the mechanisms and the certain types of doors that we're ordering. Doorknobs. Just went to order a bunch of doorknobs the other day, and it's going to take, you know, a week and a half to get them, whereas they used to just be on the shelf in stock.
So 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Rob Robillard and Jennifer Nawata here talking about supply shortages, but also ready to answer your home improvement, landscape, and garden improvement questions. We know you've got them. Feel free to call in with them. Jennifer, before we start taking some of those calls, I do want to ask you, same deal outside with landscaping and gardening?
Same deal.
Yeah, so tell us.
I mean, concrete pavers, always, never been a shortage. We're definitely 3 to 4 months out. Even bluestone has been difficult to find. Just composite, everyone wants to do a deck, everyone wants to do a patio. It's 3 months out, definitely, hands down. And like some of the industries that we talk to, some of the paver distributors, no one's ever seen anything like it. But what Rob said, production, if people aren't in the production companies, you're not going to have your project. The project's not going to happen without everything that's needed for the site, right? So when delivery trucks are backed up, when you can't get your materials, then you have really sad homeowners. But I think overall, I think people are understanding and being patient and so, just knowing it's across the board.
So let me stay with you for a second. I'm going to ask you our first question, which came in over Twitter, how to cut back hydrangeas without destroying too many future blooms. The tweeter says that theirs have become so huge with all the rain that they're blocking the sidewalk.
Well, basically, rule of thumb, cut them back after that particular hydrangea is done blooming. So you have your endless summer hydrangeas. Those bloom on old wood and they bloom on new wood. So anytime, like all hydrangeas are different. You have your panicle hydrangea, like the limelights, they bloom later in the season. I mean, best rule of thumb, when it's done flowering, cut it way back. So if you prune it at the end of the season, you're going to cut off the future buds.
So way back, meaning close to the ground, just below
Yep. Definitely not. I mean, it depends. Again, if it's an Annabelle hydrangea, you kind of treat it as a perennial. And that could be cut back to the ground, but you have to know what hydrangea you're dealing with so you could cut it back properly. But typical rule of thumb, prune it back after it's done flowering. And if it's in the way of your sidewalk and you could cut it, if you need to push it way back, take it down a couple feet and it's going to be fine for the next year.
Okay, Rob Robillard, I'm going to turn to you. Earlier today, I had to text my daughter and say, will you please put rags under the basement door in case the water comes pouring in from the rain? There's a difference between improvement and repair. How much water-based repair are we seeing right now out there? How bad is it?
Right now, I'm not seeing too much, but I am hearing about flooded basements. A lot of people have sump pumps. There's sump pumps are very active, obviously. I mean, we've gotten, I don't know how many inches in the last 3 weeks, but it's probably up in around 5 or 6, maybe more. But not a lot of water damage, not a lot of water. I'm not getting calls about roof leaks and stuff like that.
Well, that's good news. Okay, let's go to the phones. 800-423-8255. We've got Amy on the line in Plymouth. Amy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. My question is, we've recently expanded our deck and we're looking for shade. We want to put up sail shades. And I haven't had any luck finding contractors that will do residential that have a lot of experience with that. Do you have any suggestions for me?
Oh, I don't even know which of you to turn to on that. Is that you, Jennifer?
A sail shade?
Yeah.
So I can answer that a little bit because I just recently looked at one for a client. Amy, you're not going to find like carpenter, remodeler contractors that want to put up a sail shade because it's a third party aftermarket thing. But what you could do is if you had the sale shade, you had a contractor that did work for you, or maybe was building the deck for you, you could ask them to put the eye bolts in some kind of a structural post or a cable or something that you could run that sail shade off of or hang it off of. They're typically like triangular. Is that what you're talking about?
We don't still have the caller, so we're going to go ahead and say, yeah, we were talking about triangular.
I don't have a rule of thumb like Jen does. I love rules of thumb.
Rules of thumb. I mean, sometimes if you need an extra, if you're going to play off the house, you need an extra post, you would dig it like you would a footing for a deck, right? So your deck person could definitely do that for you and then put the eye bolt in. So yeah, there are ways to do it. And I think your landscape contractors or your carpenters could do it.
All right. So I'm going to ask another question from Twitter. This comes from @Gallagher. Tell us how to get berry bushes through yield without critter burglary. We are talking about chipmunks here. In this particular case, @Gallagher tried to get blueberries growing, but the chipmunks, they think, find their way inside every tightly pulled netting, etc. Chipmunks, rabbits are just hungry and present this year. What do we do?
Interesting. Well, it sounds like they don't have any kind of garden fence around it. And then you got me when you said the tight netting, because the tight netting will allow them to get in more easily because it'll be easier to walk on. I think if it's a looser netting and you tie it back a little bit, it'll be harder to penetrate through. Critters are hard to control and rabbits are out of control right now, rabbits and chipmunks. So, I mean, putting in a garden fence with tight mesh is really your best bet.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your home improvement questions. There are a couple more coming down the line on Twitter, but in the meantime, I'm going to turn back to you, Rob, because we did just talk about contractors a minute ago, and we talked about supply shortages. But what about labor shortages right now? And, you know, I remember last summer, obviously, lots of conversation about that. Have we seen relief, or is this another industry that is having trouble filling the jobs?
Oh, wow. I mean, we could talk for an hour on this. There's a huge skills gap going on right now. I mean, I'm pretty passionate about that. And I write about it on my blog, and I also talk about it in some of the videos we do. And I'm active at Minuteman Tech as a advisory member on the board there. But we have a huge, so for every 5 contractors retiring right now, we have 1 replacement. And the average contractor age in the industry is 55. So that's not a good sign. I mean, for years and decades and decades and decades, parents have, and you know, this will probably cause a huge debate or argument, but parents have been poo-pooing the trades. You know, you have to go to college. You've got to go to college. You won't do anything with your life. And that's not always the case. And there's a lot of money and there's great careers in the trades. But for 3-4 decades, that's what's been happening. Now we don't have anybody in the trades.
So what is the path to become? I mean, I'm curious about this now because you are talking about a future serious dearth in an important skill set. What's the path to becoming a contractor?
So what I try to do, and I think what the path is, I think one of the paths is trade school. There's also, you know, college trade schools like New England, Bennett Street School, New England Carpentry, Wentworth. But then there's also the good old just apprentice and mentoring. And right now I have a kid from Minuteman Tech. He's working with us for the summer. And if he's interested and sticks it out long enough, you know, the Gen X and millennials, they seem to bounce from us a lot. But we're going to hire him full time. And with the goal of in 5 years, we're going to give him a stake in the company. And we want to try to kind of entice them to stick around long enough to put their time in and actually learn enough to become a viable, really developing member of our company and then, you know, build a company from there.
All right, Jennifer Nuada, I think this next one's from you. Again, it's from Twitter. And if I try to pronounce that Twitter handle, I'm just not going to do a good job. But it's from Twitter. What landscape plants are undesirable for rabbits? Back to critters.
Oh, gosh, I mean, they're going to eat anything that they can. I mean, it all depends. I mean, they're so overpopulated right now.
Why? As you answer that question, also, why are rabbits so overpopulated right now?
Jen, there's one in my yard right now while I'm talking.
That's awesome. The rabbit. Someone broke the food chain and then it's overpopulated. I don't know if the coyotes or, you know, the food chains are broken somewhere. And so the overpopulation is out of control.
Again, I think it's the, like you see years with the hawks. There's a lot of hawks and coyotes or foxes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of chipmunks, rabbits, and squirrels. And then the next time several years later, it's the other way around.
Right. And it's just, I mean, there's certain plants they don't like boxwoods and stuff like that. But I mean, they can nibble at the bark of a base of a tree and hurt the cambium layer and destroy the tree. So they're just like a very invasive. It's a very big problem. You know, it's really hard to keep them out. And I feel like it's war sometimes. But
war of the rabbits. So, all right.
Yes.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your home improvement, do-it-yourself, contractor, landscaping, gardening question. I think we're going to stay on the critter train here with Carol in Leominster. Carol, what's your question?
I just noticed yesterday that a kind of a big section of our garden has been dug up. It's right against the house, and there's a hole going down towards the foundation.
Oh, and are you worried about the integrity of the foundation, Carol?
I'm not. I'm just worried about what kind of critter it might be and how I don't know if there's babies in there. I don't know how to take care of it.
Okay. So what can you do about the hole?
How big is the hole? Yeah, how big is the hole?
I would say, I'm not there right now, but I'd say it's about, 3 or 4 inches across, and it looks like it goes pretty deep.
I mean, it could be rabbits. It could be, It could be any kind of burrowing animal. What I would do is fill the hole up. You know, I would put crushed stone. I would fill it up and get it away from my foundation.
What I did yesterday is I raked all the dirt that had been excavated. I raked it all back over, and within 2 hours, the hole was back.
Maybe you have to have a new family member at your home.
Daddy Chef.
No, I'm just joking.
Thanks for the call, Carol. And I have to say, I'm like having this overwhelming urge suddenly to reread Watership Down after this conversation. I wasn't expecting rabbits to figure in so completely. I think this is probably a question for you, Rob. 1-800-423-8255. We've got David on the line in Holliston. David, go ahead.
Hi, I'd just like to know, what should I pay to have an exterior door installed in my outbuilding if I provide the door?
Rough ballpark, you mean?
I get prices all over the place.
So, David, it's tough to price that. I don't know what kind of siding we're tying into or trim. But, you know, a rule of thumb, Jen, wink, a rule of thumb would be probably count on labor to be the same price as the door. So if the door is probably $1,000, you're probably looking at $1,000 of labor. But also remember, you have materials needed for that. There's trim, there's spray foam, there's rubber flashing. There could be some metal flashing involved, exterior trim, flashing above that trim, as well as maybe siding tie-in, and that could add costs as well.
So while I've got the two of you, what I want to do now is kind of ask, what are the trends in improvement that you weren't expecting? Like, at this point, if you tell me lots of home offices, I'm not that surprised by that, right? Because people have been
COVID?
Working. From anything, but in the last 12 months.
Pools.
Say again.
Swimming pools. I have never seen so many asks for swimming pools, plunge pools, like dumpster pools. People want to stay at home and have their own entertainment space.
I'm sorry, did you say dumpster pools?
You did.
Yeah, that's a new thing.
That's a thing?
That's a thing.
What does that mean, Jen?
Like taking old dumpsters and putting them in the ground. But
that's gross.
There's a lot of codes that go around that. But the soak pools, those have been huge, like the plunge pools. Those are prefabricated pools that you just drop into a leveled hole, or just your regular old-fashioned 20x40 swimming pool. And it's so companies are booked out into 2022. If you called now, you would not be able to get one installed this year for sure.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. 800-423-8255. We've got Zach on the line in Concord. Zach, go ahead.
Hi there. I've been building a house and, I acted as the GC, and I'm not really satisfied with the way the finished work came out in the house. So I'm curious as to what type of contractor I should hire to to kind of redo some of the finish work.
Okay, and I'm just going to repeat your question, Zach, because your line was a little garbly. So it's finish work, and what kind of contractor do you hire specifically to do finish work? Go ahead, Rob.
So, yeah, Zach, you'd hire a finished carpenter probably. I assuming you're talking about trim work and maybe some built-ins, bookcases, crown moldings, not hardwood flooring or cabinetry. Is that correct?
Yeah. Also, you know, kind of to refinish some of the hardwood flooring and replace some of the doors that are put in.
Replace doors?
For the quality.
Yeah, he said replace doors.
Yeah, I think sometimes you could reset them if they were put in and not put in great. But a finished carpenter could handle that for you.
Great. So I'm going to turn to you, Jen, now with a question that we had from here inside the studio. If one is in an apartment and you've got windowsill plants and there's been all this rain, or window box plants, how do you deal with protecting them from getting too much rain and really kind of drowning in the water?
Well, you want to make sure there are drainage holes, whether they're pots or window boxes, and it's kind of something you should do before you plant them. But otherwise, it's just going to overflow. With planters that have saucers on them, dump out the saucers. Just make sure the water is somehow properly draining out, because too much water will kill your plant.
Thanks for that. All right, back to the phones. We've got John on the line in Somerville. John, go ahead.
Hi, I was just wondering, I've got a house that was built in the 1890s, so it's super old. The basement needs to be, I think, repointed. A lot of loose bricks and leaky water. So I was just wondering, what's the best way to go about that? Who should I talk to, and how much it might cost? Thank you.
Yep.
So great question. I did that to my house 25 years ago. I have a brick over field stone foundation. Not only is it good structurally, but it will help keep seeping water coming into your basement. So basically what you do is you need a mason. And it is costly because it is 90% labor intensive. So they need to chip out the, whether you have bricks or stone or whatever, they chip out the joints and they repack the joints with mortar. And then one thing they can do, especially like what I did with the bricks, is that they can then parge over the bricks completely with mortar, kind of like a plaster coat, a thin plaster coat, but with mortar. It's a great way to, like I said, structural integrity and also keep some of the moisture out of the basement.
Also, I now know what the word parge is, so I've got my new vocabulary for the day. That's awesome. Okay, back to the phones.
A brick mason as well. That's important.
Yeah.
Not just a mason, someone who specializes in it.
Yeah, somebody who works with stone or brick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to underscore that, Jennifer, that that's a thing. And if you're going to work with stone or brick, you specifically want somebody, I'm hearing you, who specializes in the kind of materials you want to work with.
Right, correct.
Okay, let's see if we can get one more call in here. We've got Pervez on the line in Andover. Pervez, go ahead.
Yeah, we have a roof where we have skylights, and there's leaking, especially in the last few days. And we've been getting all kinds of estimates about how to change the skylight or just do a ceiling job. And some guys have even said change the roof. So we're very lost. So how do you think we should approach this problem?
How old is the roof and how old are your skylights?
About 20 years.
Both of them?
Both, yeah.
So it sounds like a poor installation. They shouldn't be leaking at 3 years.
Skylights, no, he said 20 years. I'm sorry, 20 years.
20, I heard three, sorry. So 20 years is the lifespan of your skylight. It's time to replace it. The seals might be gone. Definitely you need a new flashing kit. You can flash old skylights, but the question is the roof worth doing that to? And tying into, or is the roof need replacement? So I guess my answer is, if the roof is fairly new, then spend, you know, a couple $100 and buy a kit. It's a flashing kit, and reflash your skylight. If the roof is old, then I would replace the skylight when you do the roof.
All right. So Jennifer Nawada, I want to turn back to you now. And I want to kind of ask you, for those who do not have any kind of green thumb, whether they live in a house and have a yard, or they live in an apartment or condo and they're dealing with something with their windows or a deck, what is a good project to start with to sort of begin to have some outdoor plants, flowers, et cetera?
Good. I mean, a lot of times I say container gardening because it's contained. It could be on your deck. It could be closer to you. Sometimes people are afraid to go out in their own garden. And if you start with a small area, and then you build off that. Just like over COVID, a lot of people started raised vegetable gardens, like a 2x6 raised bed. And I say raised bed because you have to know what kind of soil is in there, because you don't want contaminated soil. So organic soil, raised bed, start with maybe 5 plants and see how you do. Honestly, just stick it in the ground and it will grow, and keep it watered. And then you'll amaze yourself. And then it's a whole new life cycle, whole new beginning, way of thinking of things, and something encouraging to do.
That is just delightful. Okay. And Rob,
sorry.
No, I love it. So lightning round to you, Rob. If somebody wants to start a small, doable home improvement project that makes them feel master of their domain, what's a good one to take on?
Oh, man. Well, there's so many DIY projects, but painting is probably one of the easier ones, right? I think another fun one is wainscoting, or what I would call faux wainscoting, where you do kind of astral applied moldings, and you proportionally put them on a wall and come up with like a chair rail look. That's always a fun one to do.
Those both sound pretty rewarding. Okay, that is Robert Robillard from A Concord Carpenter and Jennifer Nawada, a landscape contractor for the show This Old House and owner of Nawada Landscape Designers Incorporated. That was really fun and informative. Thanks so much to both of you. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
awesome. Thank you. Have a good day.
Finally today, we are going to finish by
saving
checking.
The best for last. I love it, Tiziana. Way to go.
There he is. There is Chris Siderick. We're here to check the score with Radio Boston's Chris Siderick. Hey there, Chris.
Hey, TD. How's it going?
It's good things, and it was quite a weekend. Some interesting baseball, a lot of other activities going on. We are going to talk baseball today, and I got to say, at the billboard for the show, we said that the Red Sox turned out to be really good, and we did not see that coming. Would like to point out again, you did not see that coming. You said the Sox were going to be terrible. So what is going on, and how could you get it so wrong?
Yeah, I mean, this is hard, but I want to start by saying I was wrong.
Yes.
There we go. That feels
Sorry,
good.
That
okay,
was no, really I, satisfying.
I was not alone on this, Tiziana. This team, so this Red Sox goes into the All-Star break here. They're 55-36. They have 55 wins. They're on pace to win 98 games this year. Vegas, at the beginning of the year, predicted this would be an 82-win team. So you're talking about 16 wins better than the experts in Vegas are predicting. This team is way overperforming the expectations. It's been fun to watch.
Okay, so fun seems to be, you know I'm a baseball fan and I do watch a lot of Red Sox, and fun seems to be the operative word. This team seems to be having a really good time. Is that how they're doing it, or is there like some skill that I'm missing that's also involved?
It's so true, and I think that is a huge part of it. Clubhouse mentality is big, and kind of how guys interact with each other. Of their 55 wins, 29 of those wins have been come from behind wins. So they fall behind, and they just never feel out of it. They don't care how much they're down by. They keep fighting, and that is a huge bonus in the game of baseball. You've also got they're being led by their young all-stars, Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts, are performing incredibly, both at the plate and in the field. Their pitching has been the biggest surprise, starting pitching and bullpen. Their bullpen has a major league best 6 pitchers with 20-plus appearances and a sub-3 ERA, which I know our director Jamie's like, I don't know what any of those numbers mean. It means once the starter goes out and the bullpen guys come in, it is tough to score against these guys. And that is a huge bonus for them as they hit the second half of the season.
All right, so let's talk about the second half of the season, because one hypothesis is they weren't expected to be good, so they could be loose and go have a lot of fun. And then that led to winning. But now there's the break. There's this big great, listeners who don't know, there's this All-Star game that gets played this week with players from all the different teams, and all the regular season play stops during that break. And then when people come back, that's really sort of the beginning of the second half of the season. Could the new expectations and this break kind of kill that momentum?
I mean, it could, but I don't see any reason to think that it would. They have a couple of things kind of working for them as they move into the second half here. One of the biggest, they have Chris Sale, who will be coming back from Tommy John surgery. He pitched 2 innings of a simulated game this weekend. Maybe we'll have a rehab start this week, which would mean folks in Worcester would have something extra to woo about.
So wait, just so time out. For listeners, woo is the thing. Chris Sale is like a very big deal in pitching.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a potential Cy Young candidate coming back. So that will be a huge acquisition. There's also the trade deadline coming up at the end of the month. And Tiziana, we've talked across sports about how key it is for running an organization when you hit that trade deadline. If you feel like you're close, what it does for your team when you add a piece. And I really do think if the Red Sox add a starting pitcher here, a decent, doesn't have to be a great, but a decent starting pitcher, just to kind of beef up that rotation, protect from injuries, in addition to Chris Sale, I think that would give this team some real hunger coming into the second half. And I think they have a chance to make a run in the title.
Okay, you sound very confident, but as we have now established, you can be wrong. So are there any red flags for the second half of the season?
It's red. No, there are a couple red flags. And one for me, you talked about clubhouse attitude and the fact these guys are having fun. There has been a little bit of, if you remember the old dark days, the Josh Beckett chicken and beer kind of complaining mentality. You've got Garrett Richards, one of their starting pitchers, who's really had a tough time ever since baseball cracked down on the sticky stuff, right? They won't let him use glue anymore to glue the ball in their hand. And he really hasn't been himself since that rule change. And then there were some comments from Kike Hernandez, Sox second baseman, going into the break. He was upset that the team was going to have to play on Thursday. I want to play a little bit of sound here just to kind of get what I'm talking about.
I think more important than that is the extra day of the break that MLB took away from us for some reason. But whatever, that's them and their logic of making schedules. And I guess 28 teams need 4 days off and two teams don't. So whatever.
So, I mean, that's like a little bit of excuse making going into the break, right? They start Thursday night. The rest of the league starts Friday. Kind of should be a who cares. So you hate to see guys kind of key in on excuses before you even get to the thing you need an excuse for. But short of that, I think this team has some great young leaders. I think the offense is phenomenal. One of the best offenses in baseball. If the pitching can maintain, they're going to be contenders.
Okay, so I got caught up in baseball. But in our last minute or so, Chris, I do want to ask you, there's something interesting you're watching as the Olympics approach. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, besides the exciting performances, there are a ton of incredibly exciting athletes. Obviously, Simone Biles, potentially her last Olympics. I wanted to shine a quick spotlight on Javon Harrison, who won both the high jump and the long jump at the U.S. track and field trials. He's going to be the first American to compete in both events at the same Olympics since Jim Thorpe in 1912 is how rare that is.
Wow.
You know, folks might think high jump, long jump is all jumping, right? You actually use different shoes for that. The techniques are so different. So that is an impressive feat. But the thing that I'm going to be watching that I think will be really interesting is we've seen so much athlete activism in the last few years. And what will the Olympics do if and when they have athletes speaking out, protesting during ceremonies? They've already kind of tweaked their rules, but it's not quite as free as you might like it to be. I would expect to see some demonstrations on the field during ceremonies. How will they react? We'll have to see as it goes. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
And there's some history in this, Chris, and, you know, sort of lightning round here. The Olympics has a history on that front. What do we need to know?
Yeah, I mean, folks might remember that iconic picture from 1968, Tommy Smith holding the black glove fist up in the air. You know, Noah Lyles is a sprinter for the U.S. He wears the black glove kind of in homage of that. And Smith has talked about the fact that he sees today's athletes as kind of taking that baton and carrying it forward. And I think it'll be really interesting to watch what the athletes do and how the Olympic Committee reacts.
All right. We will talk more Olympics in the days ahead. That's Radio Boston's Chris Sidorick. Chris, thanks for checking the score with us.
Thanks for having me.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Sidorick, Walter Wuthman, and Amanda Beland with help from Stephen Gelman. Our engineer is Marquise Neal. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.